It was in 1948, in a sermon called The Soul of a Nation, that A. Pal Davies said, "Only one nation has founded its life upon the principle itself that all people are created equal and endowed by their Creator with the same inalienable rights." Those words describe our national soul. Today, that soul is not destroyed, but it is being tested. Tested by a real estate developer who is a skilled salesman. Over the years, many good, trusting people have been taken in by skilled real estate salesmen. Indeed, Sarasota itself was laid out by a group of such land developers. In the spring of 1885, near today's Five Points intersection in downtown Sarasota, a Scottish land syndicate called the Florida Mortgage and Investment Company purchased 50,000 acres to sell to Scots who were anxious to escape an economic depression in Scotland. The developers heavily promoted Sarasota as a surefire panacea for the economic woes of Scotland. They promised the Scots homes and farmland in a tropical paradise. The salesman in Glasgow said that an inviting community on the sunny shores of Sarasota awaited the arrival of the people of Scotland. The Scots were told that the new homes in Sarasota were already built and they were waiting for them. Those who bought into the scheme expected to find a little Scotland where they could be gentlemen farmers. Approximately 60 men, women, and children sold their belongings and they boarded a ship in Glasgow to come to the New World. They arrived here by steamship on December 28, 1885. They were dropped with their baggage into a wilderness, they were ill-prepared to deal with. Tired and hungry, they found there were no homes, no roads, only jungle. Now, I suspect that the salespersons for the Florida Mortgage and Investment Company back in Glasgow really believed that by the time the Scots arrived in Sarasota, the jungle would be cleared and the houses would be built. The lumber was on order. But this did not happen. Disappointed and discouraged, within a few weeks, most of the settlers left, realizing that they had been conned by the real estate developers. I thought about these settlers this week as I contemplated the election of a real estate developer as president of the United States. And I thought even Unitarian Universalists can be conned by developers. Reverend Paul Rich is a historic figure from the last century. Paul was a very good salesman, and his family founded the Rich Products Corporation, a very successful part of the food industry. You may find their products in our grocery stores, non-dairy cream for your coffee, and so on. In 1962, Paul Rich convinced the members of the Unitarian Church of East Bridgewater, Massachusetts, to call him as their minister. Reverend Rich had big plans for the church. He secured a bank loan in the name of the church and hired contractors to do extensive interior renovations, extensive landscaping outside the church. The contractors built two swimming pools. They built an art gallery, and they put sculpture in the church common, and they constructed parking lots. Now, I haven't been able to document this, but I have heard that one of the swimming pools was in the basement of the East Bridgewater, Massachusetts church, an old New England church. And I heard that Reverend Rich had windows cut in the floor of the sanctuary so children could look down and see the pool while they were worshiping on Sunday mornings. He assured the church members that his wealthy family would pay for everything. And indeed, they did contribute $100,000 to the project. But this was not nearly enough. I suspect that Paul Rich believed that people would find his new construction so exciting that many would join the congregation and contribute to pay the mortgage. This did not happen. The bank took the church to court. The members of the congregation said, "Well, we didn't know he was doing this. It's his responsibility, not ours." The judge said, quote, "Although a church's parish committee, which had authority over the church's business affairs, had no actual knowledge that the church minister had, without authorization, executed mortgages on behalf of the church, the committee failed to conduct a reasonable and prudent inquiry, which would have led to the discovery of the mortgages." So the church was held liable and sold and closed. Well, I thought about this con in the last few days. In the past year, nearly half of America's voters failed to conduct, in the judge's words, a reasonable and prudent inquiry that would have led to the discovery that they were being misled. Instead, they trusted the man who is now president-elect. Now that the election is over, I am not constrained by IRS rules preventing me from taking a side in the election. And to any visitors we might have with us this morning, let me explain that Unitarian Universalist churches are a mixture of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, and that I, as your minister, I speak only for myself. Each of you has the right to agree with me or disagree with me or just take a nap if you wish to do so. In my view, on November 8th, nearly half the voters in America were taken in by an unethical but able salesman. He sold himself by ridiculing his opponents and by promising things that he cannot possibly deliver. Of course, like the Scots in the spring of 1885, who had not yet arrived in the Sarasota jungle, many people today do not yet know that they have been conned. They still believe in the salesman. I know some of you believe our president-elect only cares about himself, or himself and his family, and not about our country. My own view is that he sincerely believes he knows what is best for our country, and therefore it is okay for him to misrepresent, to exaggerate, to tell half-truths, and to hurt others in pursuit of the greater good, because he knows what's best. I think, however, he is terribly mistaken. So much of the good work done by our current president is likely to be lost in the next few months and years. Now, we can't say that we weren't warned. Previous Republican candidates for president, Mitt Romney and John McCain, warned us. Previous Republican presidents warned us. Our own Republican senator here in Florida called him a con artist. But none of this was enough. with the last-minute help of the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, nearly half of those who voted decided to believe the salesman. Because our electoral college system, an antiquated form of election from 200 years ago, because of that, the nearly half was enough. A majority of Americans did recognize that the president-elect is not to be trusted. For those of us who see the problem, how are we coping? Well, National Suicide Prevention Hotline saw a sharp spike in calls Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. The Canadian immigration website crashed. Doctors are getting calls from patients asking for medications to treat anxiety and panic. And churches all across the country have opened their chapels for people to come and to pray. Of course, none of us want our new president to fail. We hope he will rise to the occasion. We hope he will appoint wise advisors and that he will lead us well. However, I do not see this as likely. To help me cope, I stopped watching any television news. On Wednesday morning, I stopped listening to the radio. I stopped reading the newspapers. One of you said, it's called going black. I have gone black. Now, the role of a minister is to hold out hope, or at least comfort a congregation. But I am uncertain that I have little inside me this morning except sadness. To help me deal with what's happened, I looked in places like Facebook to see what my colleagues are saying. In Bethesda, Maryland, my friend, Reverend Abi Jamanchi, who was for many years a minister here in Florida and has spoken in this church many times, is now serving in my former church in Bethesda, Maryland, a Unitarian Universalist Hindu from India. I recommended he apply. I'm not sure he thanks me. Abhi writes, God, it makes me sick to the stomach to write this. Most of Wednesday, I was in shock. I was broken. I was mourning and grieving. I was frightened that my Unitarian Universalist Hindu brown immigrant life would matter even less tomorrow than it does now, and that it would be the same, if not worse, for all my black, Latino, Muslim, LGBTQ, and undocumented siblings. While I am tempted to think that tens of millions of Americans elected Trump because they hate immigrants, people of color, Muslims, LGBTQ persons, and other minorities, there is more than a grain of truth to that assumption, he wrote. I recognize that the desire to scapegoat others may be coming out of a sense of insecurity, born from a sense of loss. In this case, the loss of jobs, the loss of stagnant wages, and the growing income inequality. Now we need to mobilize and work harder more than ever to counter the ultra-right backlash that will try to disseminate every aspect of President Obama's legacy, from healthcare to immigration to marriage equality to reproductive rights to climate change. May we nurture one another and recommit to serving humanity. May we nurture one another, he said, and recommit to serving humanity. Well, if Abhi can recommit to serving humanity, perhaps I can find it in myself the strength to do so also. So I wrote a friend in Edinburgh, and I said, I noticed that your church does not have a minister right now. Mary wrote back, "Actually, we're going to call a minister on Monday, Roger." And then she said, "All my American relations and friends have been in our thoughts as we watch in disbelief that someone purporting such disrespectful attitudes and values has been elected to the highest office. We are living in challenging times, and it would be easy to duck our heads and try to let it pass by. But I do think there may be a need for the calm, rational, respectful voices to be heard," suggesting that I might be one of those. "Obama's grace in handling over the office is such a contrast to the tenor of the campaign. This is a time, however, when we all feel small and powerless, and yet might have to find our voice again." So in Edinburgh, Mary wants me to find my voice again, and I owe it to her as my friend to try. In a school outside Washington, D.C. Wednesday, my son, who is a music teacher, talked to his high school class of African Americans and immigrants from Mexico and Central America. He has a whole series of classes, five a day, filled with these people, teenagers. He said, "I told every class they were safe in my room. I told them I love them for whom they were and respected them. I told them I expected them to not talk like our president-elect. I told them we all respected and valued each other's culture and gender. And then we proceeded to have a pretty productive day." So if my own son can keep going, I can find it inside me to have the strength to try to keep going also. I have a friend in Wyoming, the Reverend Leslie Key. She's deeply involved in our Native American culture in Wyoming. And she wrote this: "My aching heart needed some tending today. So we picked up my mom and we drove west and then along the back road behind the Alcova Reservoir. When we came around the corner, we found rock formations that are 3 million years old. For me, they are the spiritual essence of the grandfathers, and the fertile ground is the spiritual essence of the grandmothers. I'm going to come back on Sunday after church, and anyone who's grieving is invited," she said. "We will have a prayer ritual and then let our hearts and bodies soak up the real truth of our world. Then we will know what to do next. I also saw my spirit animal on the drive home, a bald eagle. I had not seen one in over a year. My heart feels better. Everything is as it should be outside the human community." Well, Reverend Key reminds me that I always find strength and help in the beauty of nature. Perhaps this is also the soul of America, the beautiful beaches of Sarasota, the bright colored autumn leaves of New England, the colorful rock formations of Mammoth Cave in Kentucky, the uplifting grandeur of the Rocky Mountains, the hot geysers in Yellowstone, the many layers of stone of the Grand Canyon going back to the beginning of the earth, the 2,500-year-old redwoods in Kings Canyon National Park, the red glow of volcanoes in Hawaii. Outside our foolish election, all this continues. All of it puts this past week in perspective. Now, I'm sorry, but I have not been able this morning to sugarcoat what has happened. I find it helpful, though, to take a break from the news for a time. I find it helpful when other people I respect, like Abhi Janamachi and my own son, continue to persevere. They provide an example for me that I can follow. I find it helpful when friends like my friend in Edinburgh and my friend in Wyoming encourage me to keep going. They give me strength. And it is good for me to be reminded of the strength they draw from the beauty of the universe around us. Now, there will be a nearly full moon over our nation tonight, the biggest full moon since 1948 because of the closeness of the moon. And reading about this made me think of a passage by Dr. Martin Luther King. In 1959, Dr. King and Mrs. King journeyed to India, to a point in southern India where the landmass ends at the very bottom of the continent, and the vast rolling waters of the ocean have their beginning. When he returned, Dr. King talked about this experience in a sermon, and I will end with his words. It is one of the most beautiful parts of all the world. Three great bodies of water meet together, all in their majestic splendor, the Bay of Bengal, the Arabian Sea, and the Indian Ocean. I remember, he wrote, how we went out there and looked at the old big rocks, a sight that was truly incredible, out into the waters, out into the ocean. Seated on a huge rock that slightly protruded into the ocean, we were enthralled by the vastness of the water and its terrifying immensities. We looked at the waves of those great bodies of water as they unfolded in almost rhythmic suspension. As the waves crashed against the base of the rock on which we were seated, an ocean music brought sweetness to the ear. To the west, we saw the magnificent sun, a red cosmic ball of fire, appear to sink into the very ocean itself. Just as it was almost lost from sight, Coretta touched me and said, "Look, Martin, isn't that beautiful?" I looked around and I saw the moon, another ball of incredible beauty. As the sun appeared to be sinking into the ocean, the moon appeared to be rising out of the ocean. When the sun finally passed, completely beyond sight, darkness engulfed the earth. But in the east, the radiant life of the rising moon shone supreme. This was, as I said, one of the most beautiful parts in all the world, and that happened to be one of those days when the moon was full. This is one of the very few points in all the earth where you can see the setting of the sun over the ocean and the rising of the moon over the ocean simultaneously. Dr. King said, "God has the light that can shine through all the darkness." We have experiences when the light of day vanishes, leaving us in some dark and desolate midnight. Moments when our highest hopes are turned into shambles of despair, or when we are victims of some tragic injustice, some terrible exploitation. During such moments, our spirits are often overcome by gloom and despair, and we feel that there is no light anywhere. But ever and again, we look towards the east and discover there is another light which shines even in the darkness. May it be so for all of us.